Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. In today's episode, episode number 160, entitled How to Have a Life of Abundance in Wealth, Health, Love, and Happiness, I chat with Derek Rydell. Derek Rydell is a best-selling author, transformational coach to Fortune 500 execs, Oscar and Emmy winners, and world-class thought leaders, and also the author of the hit new book called The Abundance Project. In today's episode, Derek talks about how to create a life of abundance with everything you've always wanted in it. Derek and I dive into a number of topics, including his crazy backstory and near-death experience that completely changed his life, how to expand your consciousness beyond what you just see, how to start making positive things happen, and how to use the 7 abundance principles to change your life today. If you're wondering how you can finally cultivate a life of abundance and have true happiness in your life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, if you haven't signed up for the Elite Man newsletter yet, go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. This is an incredible newsletter which helps you become the best man you can be. Every single week, we give you the best tips, strategies, and techniques for helping you master your personal, social, and business life and give you exclusive content not seen nor heard on the podcast or anywhere else. That's elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. Sign up right now. And now, a word from our fantastic Elite Man podcast sponsors. The Elite Man podcast is sponsored by HealthIQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/elite to support the show and see if you qualify. HealthIQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-minded individuals. You, being an Elite Man podcast listener, are almost certainly among those health-conscious people. That's why you should really listen up. HealthIQ can save customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. So HealthIQ rewards you for being active and taking care of yourself. How cool is that? Look, you never know what's going to happen, especially if you're married, have children, or you've had personal scares or family members dealing with health issues. This is something you definitely cannot take lightly. It's so important to make sure your loved ones are kept safe no matter what, and HealthIQ helps you do that. It's the fastest growing life insurance company in the world with over $5 billion in coverage, and they're rated 9.6 out of 10 by Trustpilot. Do yourself and your family a huge favor and check out HealthIQ. To see if you qualify for an incredible savings of up to 33%, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/elite, or mention the promo code ELITE when you talk to a HealthIQ agent. Again, that's healthiq.com/elite. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Derek Rydell. Derek, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Hey, man, it's really my pleasure and honor to be here.
Cool, man. I'm excited to have you. I was just going through some of the notes and looking forward to having this conversation. I think your new book that's just coming out now is phenomenal. I had a chance to quickly go through it, and I think the work you're doing is exciting. So I'm looking forward to learning more about you and hearing some of the coaching that you do. For the audience, the listeners who don't know who Derek Rydell is, how did you get into being a life coach, to working with celebrities, helping them make some huge breakthroughs in their life, and then of course being a best-selling author with this new book you came out with? How did that story begin?
Screwed up. I got really good at explaining why things weren't working. You know, I could point to that time when I was 10 and my dad looked at my report card and saw all A's and 1 B's and said, "What's with the B, son?" You know, so I could tell you why things weren't working, you know, after all the time on the couch and all the quizzes and assessments and all the struggles and challenges. But there wasn't really any significant transformation or growth or improvement. And in fact, I was getting worse. I was more frustrated. I felt more inadequate. It's kind of like digging yourself out of a hole. The more you dig, the deeper in the hole you get. And so eventually that struggle of self-improvement led me to getting addicted to drugs and alcohol and almost dying of an overdose. And I remember lying in the emergency room and the IV snaking out of my arm and waking, coming to consciousness, and the doctor telling me I was lucky to be alive. And I didn't feel lucky. And I couldn't figure out how all of my efforts had gotten me to such a low place. And it still wasn't enough, though. It didn't really get me to go, okay, something is really wrong with this picture. It just made me think, I just need to work harder. I just need to work smarter. I just need to, you know, attract better or something. And so I kind of doubled my efforts and dug in again. And as things often do when you dig in again, they got better for a short time. But then I was doing the movie in Jamaica, and everything went sideways again. I had a bad, messy breakup, onset, romantic kind of experience. And the director got fired, and they were fired, you know, had to reshoot literally the entire movie, basically. Luckily, I didn't get fired, but I just felt like I couldn't catch a break. And I remember going out to go diving in a reef and alone, which was my first mistake. And the second mistake was I prayed to get lost from everything above, from everything else. And be careful what you pray for, because clearly I was more powerful at that than I thought. And I got lost very soon and very badly in this coral reef, and was stuck in a pocket of fire coral and spiked coral, where it was giant spiked coral. It looked like an underwater booby-trapped tomb out of an Indiana Jones movie. Literally, I couldn't breathe deeply because I would have been skewered by these giant rows of spikes. They were that close to my face, chest, neck, et cetera, stomach. And I couldn't paddle. I had to paddle with the tips of my fingers to stay at the water level I was at, or I would have fallen onto these spikes. And I couldn't swim, you know, away, because I was stuck in this pocket surrounded by fire coral, one touch of which was like 1,000 stings from a jellyfish. And there I was, stuck. Nobody knew I was there. Nobody was coming for me. I couldn't swim down. I couldn't lift my head out of water, or I would have been skewered. I was just stuck. And I was stuck suddenly with all of my thoughts, you know, all of the tapes, all the self-loathing, all of that. Literally, I believe I had a glimpse of hell, because I was just stuck with my own tapes. And they were going and going and going, you know, how stupid could you be? Why didn't you think? You're so stupid. That's why your life doesn't work. You know, all of that. And then eventually the tape, you know, ran its course, like one of those old reel to reel tapes. And it went off the one tape. It was like, ch-ch, 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 ch-ch. Yeah. And there was nothing. There was nothing left. Wow. There was just silence. And then there was this fear, real fear, like, oh my God. And then there became negotiating and bargaining, you know, like the five stages of dying. If you get me out of this, God, life, whatever, I promise to go to church on Sunday. And the universe was not playing let's make a deal that day. And finally, it got to the place where I knew I was going to drown. And it's hard to understand that finality. It wasn't like I was gone. I had gone past the, I hope I don't. Maybe I'll get out. I hope, you know, I'm not going to make it. This is it. And I was exhausted, and all that was left was real surrender. And so I did. I let go. And in that moment of really unconditionally letting go, something snapped, something cracked, something opened up in me, and I had a flash. And I saw that the self I'd been trying to improve all those years was a fictional character, a mental construct, that it was made up of parental fantasies and peer pressures and societal conditioning. He was a character. And nothing I would ever do would ever make him enough. But that behind him or around him, there was another me. And this me had never been damaged, and so he didn't need to fix himself. And this me was already whole and complete, so he couldn't improve himself. And it was, again, just a flash. But in the next moment, and I still don't understand quite how, I was outside of the pocket, standing on the coral reef, looking in, where I had been stuck. Wow. And the exit was inches from me the whole time, but I just couldn't see it. Hmm. And something had radically shifted. It's like Humpty Dumpty had fallen off the wall, and everything had this shimmering glow to it. And I was able to dive on the other side and swim away out of the reef. And it so rocked my world that, like, the guy that swam in was not the guy that swam out. that I pulled out of society and tried to become a monk. And that didn't work out so well. less than a week in a monastery, fasting, silent, I just freaked out and broke into the monk's kitchen in the middle of the night to steal food out of their refrigerator. And it just did not go well. So I decided to sort of cloister myself in my apartment. And I went on this inner journey to discover what had happened to me. What was that insight? What did it mean? Why did I feel so different? And that's when I eventually came out of that with an understanding of what I came to call the law of emergence, which is in distinction from the famous law of attraction. And I saw that all of life was emergent, which then I began to study quantum physics and saw that that was the same thing that it really revealed, and that I looked at all of nature and saw that all of nature is emergent. In other words, everything is emerging out of something. It's not really cause and effect, the old Newtonian model. And the oak's already in the acorn, and when the conditions are right, an oak emerges. The acorn doesn't go out and get an oak, attract an oak, achieve an oak. It's already an oak, but it's invisible. It's in the quantum field. It's in the genetic code, whatever you want to call it. And suddenly I had an understanding of a model of life, and I began to apply it, and my life completely exploded. From being broken, living on 19 cents boxes of macaroni and cheese in a little one-room apartment, to ultimately traveling the world, million-dollar homes, you know, global business, all this stuff. And so that was awesome, you know, but before that, so that's what led to my first real teaching on emergence and my first book by the same name, Emergence, and also my podcast of the same name, Emergence. But then as I went along in that early stages, I ran again into the wall of abundance, and I was on the verge of being broke again. And I was really pissed off. I really didn't understand it. I was angry at life, the universe, God, whatever your concept is. And I remember sitting in my meditation chair and saying, okay, I'm not getting out of this chair until I know the truth. Either this is a bunch of BS or there's really something here. And I sat there all night. And at some point in the night, I had a breakthrough again, another one of those experiences. And it showed me that I had made my bank account, my savings account, my source of security and safety and support. And whenever you do that, the universe is set up to fail you. Whenever you make anything outside of you your source. And so that was the beginning of a journey of really understanding what I now call the abundance principle. And by the way, when that was revealed to me that night, all the pressure and the stress went away. I was about to be evicted. I had bills and it was a mess. And I suddenly was at peace. And I was at peace for the next several days. And then I got a call from a former acting agent who said, you know, we got a call for a commercial audition. I know you don't do commercials because you're too spiritual. That's what the agent said, because I was kind of crazy back then. You know, I thought you couldn't be spiritual and be anything else. And he said, but they called looking for you out of the blue. And I knew that was an answer. And I went on it and I got the job. And for 2 days' work, I made more than I'd ever made in an entire year. So that set me on the course. There's something else here. There's another distinction around what does it really take to create an abundant life, and to create it, as you said, as we were talking before we started, to create abundance regardless of the conditions you've been through or that you're currently facing. Mm-hmm. And that led to a discovery and an understanding of that model and framework, and ultimately my life going to a whole new level, and then, you know, teaching it and helping lots and lots of people turn their financial situation around, you know, get out of bankruptcy, make more in a month than they ever make in a year, you know, get their dream home, you know, travel, whatever abundance is for them. And it's not just about money. It's about having more than enough of whatever you need to be all that you were really created to be, so that you can do and create and contribute what you're really here for. So that's what the Abundance Principle focuses on. In my new book, The Abundance Project, walks people through.
Cool. I love it, man. That's such an awesome story. And Today, yeah, I want to dive into the new book and the concept of the Abundance Principle and the Abundance Project, which is the name of the book. I mean, I think it's really interesting. I want to dive into a couple of things you mentioned, though, specifically the near-drowning experience. That sounds like such a profound moment in your life. And actually, yeah. I've actually had about 10 years ago a similar, not quite to the extent where maybe you were, where like it was as bad as that, but I almost drowned actually myself one day hanging out with a couple of buddies in a lake. I thought I could swim. I was exercising a lot and kind of getting big, you know, muscles and doing right. that kind of thing. And for anyone who knows, if you have extra muscles, it takes a lot more oxygen to supply the muscles. So I was kind of bulked up,
yes.
you know, 15, 20 pounds more than I probably should have been. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. I can swim to the other side of that lake. It always looks a lot closer than it is. So we start swimming to the other side of the lake, and halfway through, I just completely gas out. Like, I just can't fucking
right.
go anymore.
Right,
and,
right.
And next thing you know, I'm like, you know, trying to go backwards because, you know, I'm not going to make the – I know I can't right. make it that the way I was going. So I start going backwards and make it, you know, maybe like 50 to 100 feet more. And I just – I couldn't go any further than that. And I started to kind of wave yeah. my hands up, et cetera, asking for help. And long story short, about 2 or 3 minutes later, after I had already exhausted my energy, I started going under. Like, I couldn't support myself anymore, float. And right as I was going under, like, I literally kind of just, like, you know, gave up at the fact that I wasn't going to be able to stay afloat anymore. I started going under. And, like, maybe 2 or 3 seconds later, a couple of my buddies pulled me out. And literally I had to like be on their back as they like carried me out of the water for the next few hundred feet. And it was yes. just, it was really scary. It was one of those just kind of life changing moments where it wasn't yes. like in your sense where like my life completely changed after that. But it was like an eye opening experience where like I'll never do something again like that where I would put myself in that kind of danger.
Yes.
And it is just it's just something about that like being pushed to the edge of nearly dying that really changes your perspective on things. And some people, you know, completely changes the trajectory of their life. Other people, I think it just kind of opens their eyes to the fact that life can change at any moment. And, you know, if these guys were a couple seconds later, I might be dead right now, honestly. And it's something to that. And I think like for you, for instance, it was really big in changing your life. Can you just speak to the experience itself, like, was it like a godly experience? Was it more of like a spiritual experience? Was it, I mean, how did that actually like feel
yeah.
to you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I do believe in God, but not in the way most people think of God, not a man with a beard on a cloud, not a anthropomorphic
yeah.
deity, but more as the underlying intelligence and order that governs the universe, the source out of which everything came and continues to unfold, which is actually, by the way, what all the great master teachers were actually teaching, whether it's Buddha or Jesus or Krishna or Lao Tzu or whoever. It's just it's gotten very misinterpreted. If you go to the original texts and follow them, you see they were all essentially teaching the same thing, and none of them were teaching about a man with a beard on a cloud. But so I believe in an underlying order and an underlying set of principles, a mind, a consciousness that really is within us and that we're an expression of. And when you understand those principles and understand how to live according to them, you can begin to create and express the way you were designed, which is very much the way all of creation operates. And now I've come to that over the years. I used to not believe in anything. But I've always been a seeker of truth. I always knew there was something more going on. I just didn't know what, and I was determined to find out. But in that particular experience, it wasn't like I had the clouds parted and I felt the angels descend or any kind of holy or sacred or kind of, you know, those kind of things. It wasn't like that. It was more like, I don't know how to explain it. It's more like almost probably a drug-induced feeling, you know, if you have an interesting trip on some kind of psychedelic, where my mind expanded, my awareness expanded, the perceptual doors and windows of my mind were blown open for a moment, and I could see beyond my personality construct, beyond my self-concept, beyond my limited perspective. Partly because the mind had reached its edges, And it was just like, I give up, man. And it was just like, poof. And so a little bit like, I think if you've heard of Eckhart Tolle, and when he talks about mm-hmm. him wanting to kill himself, and he got to a point where one night he's like, I can't live with myself. And then he heard himself say, I can't live with myself. Wait, who's the I and who's the self? Who's talking? And that was so, it so tweaked his mind that it's kind of, it just collapsed. And then he had that moment, and he was being pulled into the tunnel, and then he woke up and he had no ego for a long, long time. It was kind of like that, but not as extreme. I didn't spend the next 3 years in bliss on a park bench, but it shattered. Like I said, Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall, and I couldn't put it back together again. There was something new that was revealed. Now, what happened after that, though, when I left the reef, everything, I could see this light and this luminosity shimmering around everything and everyone. In fact, I remember talking to somebody in the water after the experience, and I couldn't help but notice the shimmering energy all around them. So that was new. and then since then I did, when I went to the monastery and tried to be a monk, and I had my first out-of-body experience that was terrifying and bizarre. And I've had many of them since. But so I've had a lot of experiences since that were very profound. And like the moment I expressed where I was in my apartment and I had the breakthrough of the voice literally speaking to me and saying, you made the bank savings account your God, your source. And it actually said to me, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And I half expected to turn around and see, you know, Charlton Heston holding a tablet, you know, with the wind blowing his hair back. And it was explaining to me that the real meaning of that is to not make anything outside of you your source, because when you do, you'll start giving your power away to them or to that place, and then you won't be able to be you. And if you can't be you, you're of no real use in the ecosystem of life. You know, if a branch doesn't bloom, it gets pruned. So it was showing me that people are selling off shares of their power and their truth in order to get security from the world, but there is no security in the world. The source is within you. So that was a pretty profound spiritual experience, especially the peace that descended on me, because it wasn't a peace depending on conditions. My conditions still sucked, but peace was complete. And that was the key.
So there was a voice, like some kind of voice other than your own. And was it like speaking to you in the back of your head, or was it like outside your head? And then I wanted to ask about the out-of-body experiences too in a minute, but first, touch on this.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I can't really 100% remember how the voice sounded or felt. If it was more of my voice, it was using my voice, but it was clearly not me. Like there's that experience where you hear something in your mind and you know you didn't just put that there. So there's that experience. And then there is the experience where it really is like another voice. And I can't remember which one it was then. I did have some years later another one of these just, you know, life-changing experiences where I was literally at the gym. I was working out on the treadmill, and I was reading something, and it was one of those things that so tweaked my mind. In fact, this is what it said. It said, it was talking about the nature of life and the infinite mind of the universe or whatever, and that all there is this one isness, this one suchness, this one ground of being. And then it goes, even where there appears to be, for it to be missing, where it's lacking, it said, the isn't is the is appearing as the isn't. And my mind just went and then literally all of a sudden I felt this energy like seeping into my awareness. And it began to speak to me, and it was blissful, and it was so compelling. I had to step off the treadmill to kind of reorient myself, and then it wouldn't let me go, and I had to lay down. And then people started walking by going, are you okay? And I'm in bliss listening to this thing that's just speaking to me, just like ministering to me. And it's telling me all these things about me and about life. And I'm just like, oh my God. And then they're like, are you sure okay? And finally I had to go in the bathroom and sit in a corner and lock the bathroom and just sit there for like a half an hour. because it just wouldn't let me go. And that was an example where for the next several days, I was just kind of walking around in this bliss, like this whole download had happened. So I've had different kinds of experiences, but I can't quite remember. And in that particular one, it really was a voice speaking to me. And, you know, I could have been going crazy, I suppose, but the results, the fruits of that experience showed me that I wasn't, that I was actually tapping into something. And again, I don't believe it's like this separate being. I believe it's our deeper being, our deeper wisdom, our deeper intelligence that's for whatever reason, we get out of our own way and we get connected. Like Ralph Waldo Emerson that said, we must remove our bloated sense of nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. So whether it's consciously, which you can do by practice, or it's accidentally or through tragedy or trauma, we have those moments where something gets moved out of the way, the veil kind of gets parted, and the static goes off the line temporarily. We tune into a better station and we suddenly receive an insight about the way things really are. And that's what it was for me. And again, the results of my life unfolding after each of these events shows me that they were legitimate and that things really went to a new level as a result of them.
Yeah, no, I think that's the most important thing. Some people may be listening thinking like, yeah, this dude just went crazy and, you know, had some bizarre experiences, but I think you're onto something. I really do. I'm a spiritual type of guy. Not necessarily, I mean, like kind of like you, not necessarily
religious.
Yeah, religious in the sense where you go to church every week or you believe in a certain deity, but I do believe that there's something out there greater than what we know now, and whether, you know, that's, I mean, who really knows what it is? Nobody knows what it is, but I think there is something out there. And I think exploring that is such a fascinating topic. I've always been curious about it myself. Derek, really quickly, I wanted to, can you just kind of talk about for a moment the out of body experiences you had, the first one there? Yeah. Like, was there some kind of psychedelic drugs or whatever going on?
Yeah,
this,
right. No, I was just meditating a lot. Uh-huh. And, yeah, it was my first time. I was at that monastery where I was trying to see if I could be a monk. And I was, you know, you could say, well, I had been fasting and silence and maybe it was some weird chemical imbalance. And I had just broken into the monk's kitchen and stole and food out of the fridge. And who knows what I ate? I just grabbed a hold of anything I could get. I got sick. And then I laid back in bed. And very shortly, I was out of my body, flying above the monastery. And it got very spooked and I left the next day. I don't even know if I slept that night. But so that was my first experience of that. I then began to study and research what the heck is this and, you know, began to see if there was a way I could train myself to do it. and then it didn't happen again for some time later. And then it would happen in certain kind of situations where I was drifting off to sleep and I was still fully conscious. I hadn't yet fallen asleep. And I would start to feel a particular series of sensations. I would feel this buzzing in my body and then a buzzing in my ear. And I would know that I had shifted and then I could like move and just slip out of my body, the astral body. And I could look back and see my body. But in other cases, I could almost phase shift into other dimensions. I know this sounds completely crazy to some people.
Yeah.
And it was crazy to me, you know, but then, you know, as I again kept studying it and all that, I began to see that, of course, there's many, many accounts of it. The most famous accounts are the ones where people, they die and they are looking at themselves down on the operating table. And then they go to another room and they hear the actual conversation of their family in the other room, which they couldn't have possibly known. All these different examples that show that. You know, and scientists try to write it off and say there's all these things that are happening, chemicals being released, and you're having a hallucinogenic, similar to a psychedelic experience, which we do have the molecular receptors, the receptors in the molecules of our brain for. But they don't explain how you could know what somebody said down the hallway or even in another city, which has also happened before. They can't explain those details and specifics. So there's something else going on, in my opinion and in my experience. The value of it is, you know, is up in the air, other than the fact that it does begin to show you there's much more going on than meets the eye. And there's lots of extrasensory experiences people have had, like one of my mentors being able to see everything in the room with his eyes completely closed, because it's the understanding that consciousness is what's foundational. We don't see because we have eyes. We have eyes because seeing is a prosthetic of consciousness. We don't have ears. We don't hear because we have ears. We have ears because hearing is another dimension of consciousness. So consciousness is the foundation. Out of consciousness, everything else emerges. And that is very, also very applicable to what we're talking about today around the way we're really designed to create in our life. And, the dogma of science is that consciousness and intelligence is an emergent property of matter. In other words, scientists of this ilk believe matter is foundational. Everything starts with matter. Atoms are the building block of everything. And then at some point through billions of years of mutation and natural selection, we developed a brain, a hunk of meat, that gave rise to consciousness. The biggest problem I have with that theory, and it is just a theory, is everything we call matter came out of non-matter. The whole Big Bang came out of nothing, no thing, right? There was not even time and space, and then bam, there was everything. Mm-hmm. So all the stuff we see came from non-stuff. And that's the big missing piece. So we've been conditioned all of our life and for centuries and millennia to believe that what we see is what's real, and we have to determine who we are, what's real, and what's possible based on what we can see, taste, touch, and measure. And that's severely limiting. And all of the greatest innovations, revelations, breakthroughs in leadership, creativity, inventions, art, have always come because somebody broke through that barrier of believing that what they see was the thing that was creating the next thing. They were able to break through it and pierce the veil of time and space and materiality and precedent and glimpse something that was invisible, an idea that was outside of time, and then bring it in and then express it, and then bam, a revolution happens, and evolution happens, and innovation happens, whether it's the revelation of the great master teachers, or the great inventors, or the great leaders, or the great artists. This has always been the case. And we're designed for that. You know, we're not designed to react to our conditions and go, well, let me look at my bank account to determine how abundant I am. Let me look at my body to determine how healthy I am, or my capacity for health. Let me look at my current relationships or the current population to determine my chances at being in a great relationship, et cetera, et cetera. We've been conditioned that way, and the truth is exactly the opposite. We are designed to create out of nothing, out of seeming no thing, but out of the real substance of everything. The same way the Big Bang happened, the same way nature creates. We're designed to create that same way. And that's, you know, ultimately what I've learned through all of these experiences of almost dying and going out of my body and almost going out of my mind, is discovering these underlying principles. But then here's what's most important, actually applying them and actually getting results. None of this would matter if it didn't bear any real fruit. So nothing I teach is theoretical. It's all based on I tried it, I've tested it over and over. I've grown myself out of multiple terrible situations, being broke, being nearly bankrupt, you know, wanting to get my dream house when I couldn't even begin to barely afford my rent, wanting to travel the world when I didn't even know how to, you know, barely get, you know, down the street. I mean, like all these examples where by applying these principles, I was able to demonstrate real results and then teach, you know, tens of thousands of people around the world how to do it. So that's what this is about. For those of you that are listening, and some of this might sound airy fairy and highfalutin and new age gobbledygook. It's not. It's stuff that I've practiced and proven and continue to demonstrate and help other people do as well.
Have you tried a Casper sleep product yet? If not, check it out now. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. They also have a breathable design that helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google, Casper is becoming the internet's favorite mattress. You spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should definitely be comfortable when you do it. With hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied, you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. Act now and get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/elite and using the promo code ELITE at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's casper.com/elite and use the promo code ELITE at checkout.
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point as well with the Big Bang thing and what was there before, you know, everything we see before the Big Bang. I mean, supposedly that's how the universe started, but what about, you know, 5 minutes before the Big Bang happened, or
exactly
500 years before the Big, or 5 billion years before the Big Bang? Like, there was something there. It can't just be nothingness. So the fact that, like, that's the theory that everything is based off of, I mean, it's a flawed theory just because of that fact. Like, before the Big Bang,
exactly,
there was something. And that's kind of like how everybody, I mean, everyone just kind of thinks that that's, you know, they take it as law, like that's what it is, like Big Bang, yeah, that's how it happened, and evolution for that matter too. I had Perry Marshall on the show a few months back, really, really smart dude. We were talking about this topic, evolution and creationism and all that, and trying to figure out like the missing link there, like what really happened and the connection between the two, because there's yes, there's good arguments for both sides, but there's also like a lot of creationists and evolutionists totally disagree with each other, but he says there's kind of something in the middle there that there's missing.
Exactly.
That's missing. But it all goes along with what we're talking about here with consciousness and understanding that there's something else more out there, and something else for that matter more inside you. Like, you were able to touch into some of those things, you know, kind of through some of these experiences you had a deeper understanding of how life works and how people work and how we can grow and get better. And I just think it's an amazing conversation. I think it's such a fascinating topic when you start to really dig into how things work, how people work, and discovering what's really behind everything. And just kind of diving into some of the work you're doing with the latest
before, book. Jump in, I mean, I think you said, Sabra, some really interesting stuff. And the whole evolution versus creationism, yeah. First of all, people have to understand some fundamentals, which is nothing can evolute unless it's first involuted, meaning you can't have an oak grow out of an acorn unless the oak is already in the acorn. And so that's, again, one of these scientific things that are taken for granted by scientists. You know, this whole idea that evolution is just this process that out of nothing, stuff just unfolds and atoms randomly crash into each other. And over time, by crashing into each other, they self-select, you know, based on what's going to work and what's sustainable, and then let go of the rest, blah, 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 survival of the fittest. Even, you know, even the purveyors of this theory over time were, even starting with Darwin, knew this wasn't a complete theory. And because one of the biggest questions is, well, first of all, if I took a bunch of nuts and bolts and things and just threw them up in the air a trillion times, would they ever form anything coherent? Of course not. If I just take a computer without any program in it and keep hitting return, 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 and then smashing the computer against the wall for a billion years, will it ever create any sustainable or any kind of program? Of course not. If I blew up a print shop a billion times for a billion years, would it ever even form a single sentence, let alone the sonnets of Shakespeare? Of course not. So if you walked by Mount Rushmore and you didn't know anything about the history of it, would you ever believe the erosion of natural forces would ever carve that in a mountain? Of course not. If I told you that, you would think I was crazy. So you know that there has to be a directional force. There has to be an underlying order, an underlying pattern of intelligence for anything to take form. And so you can't start with nothing and create anything of form unless there's some underlying intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that's why it just constantly baffles. And again, the other principle is the amount of effort it takes to try to disprove something or prove something is often parallel to how wrong you are. Meaning the amount of effort scientists and atheists and anti-believers in underlying intelligence have had to put forth to try to dismiss what is obvious is a sure sign. Whereas, you know, one of the medical axioms is if it looks like a zebra or smells like a zebra or whatever, it's probably a zebra. In other words, don't go looking for all these things that are way beyond what's right in front of you. And what's right in front of us so obviously is some kind of intelligence is at work. It's so obvious that we have to work really, really hard to disprove it and to try to explain away all of the clues that there's intelligence underlying everything. So that's why, but then evolution does happen, meaning the unfoldment of that pattern unfolds through time, and we call that evolution. And then based on the experiences and conditions, you know, a tree might unfold as part of its pattern, but then it's buffeted about by weather conditions and things. And so how it evolves will look different than the other tree that didn't have those same conditions. So it does change the possibilities, but nothing can unfold that wasn't first enfolded. So anyways, that's such a powerful topic, and it kind of drives, kind of makes me a little crazy, but in a fun way.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just kind of, you know, hit on that a little more strongly.
No, I love it, man. I think you bring up some really great points, and yeah, I think we could talk about this probably all day. This topic alone is such a fascinating topic, one that I've always been curious about since, you know, I can remember since 3-4 years old. It's always been something
right
in my mind. You know, just I think that's probably the greatest mystery in the world is understanding where we all came from, like how this all
absolutely
happened.
And absolutely.
I think conversations like this, though, just kind of enlighten yourself in like different perspectives that, you know, could potentially be the answer or what actually happened. But who knows?
Yeah, I don't even necessarily want to give people the answers. I want to inspire people to start asking more questions.
Exactly.
Right? To ask better questions. Instead of it being the unanswered question, I want them to look for the unquestioned answers.
Exactly. I love it.
The things, you get it? The things that they assume and have taken for granted and haven't questioned. And then you look at a question, what's the word? It's the quest you're on. So you're on a quest when you ask a good question, and the quality of your life is often parallel to the quality of your questions. So I don't necessarily, I'm trying to say I have all the answers or even any final answers, because it's actually infinite, but hopefully it's inspiring or provocative and it's opening up a lot of questions. And then I do have certain principles and practices that have proven to work. It doesn't mean it's got the whole answer. It just means this works. So you might want to check it out. Mm-hmm. If you want a life that works more or a life of more abundance, it doesn't mean it answers all the questions, but it does reveal some principles. You know, it reveals some principles, and that's the key. When you understand the right principles and how to apply them, they must begin to operate in your life, no matter what you've come from or where you've been or what you're facing. And that's what in the Abundance Project, I'm breaking down the core principles and practices to how to create that abundance in your life.
Yeah, no, I like your take on that. It kind of drives me nuts when I hear people say they know something is certain, or it's this way, or they're right. For, you know, there's always so many possibilities and different ways to get a favorable result, where,
yes,
you know, if you just kind of have like that attitude, like you're always right, or that it's only this way and that's it. It's, I mean, it just kind of, it shuts down so many possibilities. And
Totally.
It's just the wrong philosophy to take, I think, personally.
Totally.
I don't know. But anyways, getting back to your abundance project philosophy, what are some of the key takeaways from the book? And how can people, even if they're in some of the worst circumstances, the worst conditions, maybe down and out, depressed, they feel like, you know, you were back in the day when you were living off macaroni and cheese every night and just barely scraping by. How can these people start to implement some of your teachings and actually make a change in their life?
Well, the first thing, if you're living off mac and cheese, just get really, really good at mac and cheese, which I did. I joke, I was a little bit like Bubba in Forrest Gump, you know, where he's talking about all the different ways to make shrimp, you know, Cajun shrimp, popcorn shrimp. You know, I was like that with mac and cheese. Got my Italian mac and cheese, my Chinese mac and cheese, you know. But there's always a silver lining, right?
So,
the first fundamental principle, and we're kind of talking in and through and around them, is it's a complete reversal. I call it the great reversal because it's a reversal of what we've been conditioned to believe, which is that life's happening to us. And the truth is that life is happening through us, just like an unfolding out of us and from us. In fact, the word human comes from a Sanskrit term for man, MN, that means the dispenser of divine gifts. So we are just like a seed already has everything in it. We came with everything we need. The world can't give it to us and the world can't take it away. And again, this is what the great master teachers and philosophers have been trying to tell us, but we've misunderstood or misinterpreted it, that it's all within us, whether you call it the kingdom of heaven, the Tao, Nirvana, whatever word you use. It's all within us, not so much in your physical body, but again, in your consciousness or your mind. All the answers, all the solutions, all the energy, everything you need is within you. In quantum physics, they talk about it like you're a center of intelligence in this field of intelligence, of all intelligence, not separate from it, but like a unique expression of it. Like a branch of a tree, like a wave of the ocean, like a ray of the sun, you're a unique way the quantum field is emerging, is unfolding. So all of that intelligence, all of that power is right where you are. So this is quantum physics. This is ancient mysticism. This is the truth. And we've been taught exactly the opposite, that you come here as an empty shell and you got to find all the right things to fill it up. And you know, instead of an acorn emerging into an oak, you got to go out there and find an oak, build an oak, earn an oak, achieve an oak. And it's completely backwards. So that's the first thing. We have to understand the source of everything is in you. You don't want to lean on resource. You want to lean on the source, and it's in you. The source of power, confidence, love, joy, peace, abundance, genius, all of that is in you. If you're waiting for somebody to save you, look in the mirror. I'll wait. And that's the one that's going to save you, the one that's looking back at you. And again, I don't just mean the personality, but the source within you. So that's the first piece. This is not new age. This is not gobbledygook. This is the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you guys what I know for sure. The second thing is that when it's talking about creating your life, creating an abundant life, we have to know what is the real – and part of that, which I said was my experience – now that we know everything is within us, we have to begin to actually practice taking back our power from the places and the people that we've given it away to because we believed they were our source. Whether it's your parents, your partners, your peers, your job, the economy, the government, whatever you think has been the source of your safety, security, support, supply, nobody can ever be your source. They can only be a channel. A channel of your abundance, but it only can come out of you. And so nobody is your source, but everybody is a potential channel. And there is a practice, and I walk people through it in the book, how to begin to take back all of those places you've given away your power and twisted yourself into a pretzel to try to fit in or conform because you were caught under that particular hypnotic wealth spell, or what I also call the abundance blind spot. And then you have to go, okay, it's all within me. So that's the source of wealth. The source of abundance is in me. And because it's in me, it's invisible. So the substance of wealth and abundance is invisible. It's energy or consciousness or mind or spirit or whatever word works for you, but it's invisible. Again, there was nothing and then there was everything. Everything came out of nothing. All stuff came out of non-stuff. At root, there's mind or intelligence, and that is the very substance of everything that shows up and appears in our experience. So that's, and by the way, some examples of that are like, you know, when a harvest, a crop of fruit trees, when the farmer, when all the fruit is gone, the farmer doesn't go, well, these trees have no more fruit. They're broke. Let me cut them all down. Right? The farmer knows they're just as abundant as they were when they had the fruit. Nothing's changed. And in due season, they'll produce another harvest and another harvest and another harvest, because the wealth of the tree is the invisible process of turning the raw soil into the sap and the blossom and the marble and the fruit. And they even did studies where they took a tree in a tub, measured the volume of it, the soil and all that, grew it, grew fruit, took the fruit off, remeasured the volume of the soil. It had not changed, meaning the tree didn't even take from the soil. And it used the soil as a condition to activate its invisible wealth creating process. And just like the fable of the goose and the golden egg, you know, they're getting all these golden eggs and thought, let's cut the goose open and get all the gold. And there was nothing in there but goose. So you are like a divine power plant able to generate. And a power plant doesn't receive the energy. It doesn't even have it. It creates it. It generates it. So you have to understand that now, that wealth is invisible. It's not the dollar bills or the stocks or the bonds. And that then makes us understand more that famous saying, you know, that money is the root of all evil, which, by the way, is really the love of money is the root of all evil. And it's simply saying the love of the symbols of wealth is the root of all evil. If you think the dollar bill is your source, the job, the boss, the economy, the stock, the fruit on a tree, you're going to hold on to it, hoard it, protect it. It's going to stagnate and stop growing and flowing. Or you're going to fight, strive, struggle, kill, die to get it outside of you. And that is at the root, the source of all conflict in this world, is this belief that something or someone outside of us, the symbols of wealth, is the source of it. And that's what that statement's trying to tell us. When you love the symbol, you're lost. But when you understand the actual source is in the tree, it's in the goose, it's in you, not in the golden egg, not in the fruit. You know, if a tree had self-consciousness, it would try to hold on to all of its fruit, and then what's going to happen? It's going to rot, and eventually it's going to go barren, and it's going to die. So that's the foundation we have to understand. And then we get to the point of, okay, now it's all in me. It's invisible. It's energetic. It's mind. How do I start generating or circulating that in my life? And that's when I get in the book to the seven gifts that give you everything, or also known as the seven wealth activators. And that's how you begin to circulate this, no matter what situation you're in. By understanding this and applying this, you can literally grow yourself to the next level. And I've done it over and over again with getting dream homes, getting dream jobs, getting out of the job from hell into the job I love, getting my ideal dream relationships, traveling the world. All of it, I've grown myself out of the condition that I was struggling with into the opportunity by using these principles.
Cool. What are some of the, just a couple of the wealth activators you talk about?
Yeah. So one thing we also want to understand why it's so why circulation is the key here. Remember, if everything's in you, which it is, whatever's missing is what you're not giving. Whatever you meet is what you brought. And so if you want something more or different to come into your life, you have to let something more or different come out of you. That's the key. It's all about circulation, the law of circulation. And whereas most people, again, they believe they're waiting for something. They're waiting for their partner to be nice to them, and then they'll be nice back. Or they're waiting for their boss to give them more validation, then they'll give greater efforts. Or they're waiting for the world to validate their talent, then they'll really go for it. Or they're waiting for the economy to change, then they'll invest more, et cetera, et cetera. And it's completely backwards again, because whatever you're waiting for, you're waiting with, and you're weighing it down, and it's time to get off your big fat assets and get out in the game, play a bigger game. And this is the ultimate weight loss program, WAIT, because you have to circulate it, right? And circulation is the key to everything. Wherever there's more circulation, there's more growth, there's more green, there's more life. Wherever that stops, where the circuit gets broken, there's stagnation, diminishment, and ultimately the death of a system. So circulation is the key I want you guys to keep in mind here. So the seven gifts or seven wealth activators are the ways you can begin circulating this energy and cleaning up the blocks and the stagnation to it. And so the seven gifts in brief are giving out, giving up, giving away, giving in, giving thanks, giving to yourself, and forgiving. So these are seven core channels of circulation in your life. And if you're not abundant in some area, one or more circuits have been broken. And we have to repair that circuit and get it flowing again. And before we jump into the specific activators or wealth activators or gifts, I want to just really quickly say what the law of circulation is. It's very simple and obvious once you hear it. And that is, you cannot give what you don't have. You cannot keep what you don't give. And you cannot sustain what you don't receive. So you have to have it first. You have to activate it within yourself. You have to fill yourself up, kind of like the analogy, when the oxygen mask falls, put it on yourself first. Mm-hmm. You have to fill yourself up. A lot of people are out there trying to give, give, and do, and they're running on empty, and they get overwhelmed and burned out and resentful. So that's like breathing out all your life. You're going to die. Likewise, some people are just taking, 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 hoarding, acquiring, acquiring. That's like breathing in all the time. You're going to die. Or some people will breathe in, they'll breathe out, and then they'll stop breathing. They're not receiving. And you'll die. So you need the whole circuit. You have to have it. You have to give it away. You have to receive it. And that's a circuit. That's like one complete breath. And you'll see that same circuit in every system on Earth. It's got to have those three poles, those three elements. And so, again, I want people to boil it down because it starts to make natural sense, not airy-fairy sense, but like, oh, of course. Wherever there's circulation, in fact, look at the word currency, which we call money. It comes from a root of current, which means flow or circulation. Look at the word affluent, which means wealthy, comes from a root that means to flow into, also about circulation. So we see again and again this key of circulation, wherever in any science, in any ology, biology or whatever, you know, electrical current, physical health, economic wealth, natural, you know, in nature, it's always bodies of water. It's always comes down to, is there circulation? And the greater the circulation, the greater the abundant expression of life and energy, the less the circulation, things start to stagnate, less stuff will grow and develop, and eventually it stops growing and eventually the system dies. So we can see this is not woo-woo. This is science. This is fundamental. This is the abundance principle. But now it's now what I'm showing you in this book is how do you do it practically? And but I want people to understand some of the fundamentals, because if you don't believe, if you think this is all airy-fairy woo-woo, you're not even going to have the energy to practice or to even try. So that's why I'm spending a lot of time helping you guys really understand that this is not just some airy-fairy theory I'm pulling out of thin air. But now when you get to those gifts, we can talk about any one of them. Ultimately, one or more of them is probably where you'll discover you need the most work in. So if you want, man, I can kind of briefly go over what each one represents. And then if any one of them intrigues you, we could go a little deeper if we have the time.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just quickly go over the seven and kind of, you know, how they all work. And if there's a follow-up or two, we'll touch on that.
So, yeah, so the seven gifts are giving out, giving away, giving up, giving in, giving thanks, giving to yourself, and forgiving. And the first one, giving out, is broken into three pieces, time, talent, and treasure. And what this basically is that we all want more time or we want to give our time in certain ways, but we have stories for why we can't. We all want to express our talents more, but we have stories for why we're not fully doing it, why we're waiting. We all want to have more treasure or abundance, or we want to serve greater philanthropy or whatever with our abundance, but we're waiting to have more before we give more. All of that is backwards. As you guys are seeing, what I'm basically saying is most of what we've been taught is backwards. It's not an outside in thing. We're not supposed to wait for anything. We're supposed to become the answer we're waiting for, become the solution we're looking for. And so in the area of time, you know, in some of you guys that are entrepreneurs, including you, man, and are out there helping people, selling to people, you hear these excuses all the time. Oh, I don't have the time. I really want to do that, but I don't have the time. I really want to write a book or start a business, but I don't have the time. I'm waiting for this job to go to end. I'm waiting for my kids to go to school. I'm waiting for who knows what. There's always a quote unquote reasonable story. And what those people are in for a rude awakening is they will never have the time because it's not happening to, even if they get a big open space, they'll fill it or something will happen to fill it. All this always happens. And you guys know that's true if you're stuck in this. And so you have to begin circulating or generating or investing in that area. Now you have to make the time. You have to start putting in the time. Whatever it is that you want to create in your life, if you want to spend more time with your children, your loved ones, charity, you can't wait for time. You have to make it. You have to do it. You have to step into it. And what you'll discover is as you do that, you will start to discover you have more time. It will start to open up. It'll start to get that circulation going. Same with your talent. If you wait to be validated, approved, if you wait to have the confidence, the clarity, or the surety, you'll be waiting forever. But because the clarity you're waiting for, the confidence you're waiting for, many of the answers you're waiting for will only come as you start circulating and expressing that talent. It's like you're going on a journey and you're not going to start moving until you know what's on the other side of that mountain, but you're never going to know until you climb the mountain. If you're sitting in your driveway looking at your GPS and going, I'll start going when I know all the directions, then you'll never get there because it won't start giving you the directions until you start moving. So you have to start expressing your talents. If you're a singer, put on a concert for your cat. I used to walk around in my underwear giving talks to the wall. I used to be on road trips giving talks to nobody. My wife would wake up and see me mumbling and be like, oh, you give me another talk? And I'm like, yeah. And so you have to circulate it. You have to generate it. You want to write a book. You need to start writing it. You need to make a schedule. You need to do it. Now, this all sounds, I'm starting with this one because it all sounds familiar. You're like, oh, yeah, of course. But how many of you, if you're honest, have really good rationalizations for why you're not really investing your time, your talent, and your treasure wholeheartedly in the dreams you have? You have good rational reasons. You know, when you rationalize, you're just telling yourself rational lies because you've been caught by one of these hypnotic wealth spells or abundance blind spots, and you believe that at some point in the distance, things will get better, but they won't. You have to be different. You have to give more. You have to show up more. So that's an easier one to understand because we hear that a lot, but I'm putting it in this context so that you guys realize it. You have to step out and do it, and do it before the world is validating you, giving you the time or the energy or the money, and you'll find you start to have more and more. I will say one last little example of that from nature. You know, if you've ever gardened or been to a nursery, there's, you know, little pots with little plants, and then you see the bigger version of the plant in a bigger pot, and then a bigger tree version of it in a giant pot, and then the really big tree is out in the yard or in the field. Well, if you were that little plant in that little pot and you had self-consciousness like we do, you might go, well, God, I want to be in a bigger pot. I'm going to wait until I get the chance to be in a bigger pot. Then I'm really going to grow. That's akin to what we do. When I get that bigger opportunity, that next thing, when I finally meet the love of my life, then I'll be a more loving person, whatever. And what will happen if that little plant was to operate that way? It would stay in a little pot. So instead, it goes, here's my pot. I'm going to fill it out. I'm going to dig my roots as deep as they can go, spread my branches as far and as tall as they can go. I'm gonna live full out. I'm gonna maximize every resource, every opportunity in this moment, in this pot. And then what happens? The gardener plants it in a bigger pot. And then it does the same thing. Bigger pot, bigger pot. It's natural. We've lost touch with the natural order of things. And that is in a nutshell or in a pot, the abundance principle. Okay. So that's one example there. I can keep going and talk about some of the other ones, or is there any one of the ones that intrigues you? I can dive into that one.
Yeah.
Or I can repeat them again. I don't remember.
No, I know we're kind of, running up on time here. Just, maybe a couple more just quick examples of some of the, I know there's seven, maybe like two other examples of some of the other ones that
sure.
are maybe more important or, you know, the guys can take away right now.
So one of the other of these activators is really powerful. And it was actually talked about in that New York Times best-selling phenomenal book, The Magic Art of Tidying Up. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, I haven't.
It was a huge phenomenon. And it came out after I'd been teaching this, but I remember there was a part in there where she talks about an almost mystical transformation that happens when you clear out things in your home and in your life that you don't need, that you don't use, that doesn't bring you joy. Clear out all the clutter. And I've been teaching for a while, and this gift, giving away, the second gift, what it is that in your home, garage, car, whatever, you've got a lot of junk. Most of you do. Most of us do. We even have a thing we call the junk drawer, which is always curious to me. Like, isn't that just another name for a trash can? it's just a vertical, it's a horizontal trash can, really. We put all the things that really we should throw away into a drawer so we don't have to decide whether we should throw them away. But anyway, we have a lot of stuff in our house and in our lives that, you know, that stack of magazine subscriptions that you bought one night on an infomercial, you know, after drinking too much or eating too much Haagen-Dazs or breaking up with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, and you swore to yourself you were going to read those Inc. magazines or Entrepreneur magazines or whatever they were, and you haven't and you won't. But you won't get rid of them because every time you think about it, you feel so bad, like you've wasted your money, your time, you were stupid, whatever, and it's there. Or, you know, all number of things you've bought, clothes that still have the tags on them, things in your drawers, think clothes you never have worn for the last couple of years, you're not going to wear them. And what happens is, because everything is energy, and we know this now from science, everything is made up of atoms. Atoms are made up of mostly energy and information. All of that is stuck energy, literally stuck energy. It's stagnation. And it's stuck story, too. It's stuck emotion. And you're literally stuck in these places in your story and in the flow of energy. And that stagnation is not allowing for what's trying to come into your life. And so this gift is all about going through your life. You don't have to do it all at once, but beginning to get rid of everything you don't really need, that you don't really use, that you're not going to use, that's not bringing you joy, that's not fulfilling a function, getting rid of it. And what that does is it makes space, literally, mentally, emotionally, energetically, for what's new, for what's now, for what's next. And it's profound what can happen when you start to do this. First of all, the cathartic experience you can go through just doing it, the healing, the understanding you'll begin to have of your own psychology and your own motives and the unconscious patterns that are running you and limiting you. All of this starts to get clear. Again, I walk you through it in much more detail in the book. But even if all you did from listening to this call is to start applying your talents, your time, and your treasure in the direction of your dreams more, and just clean out all the shit in your life, you are going to look back a month from now and go, holy crap, that was one of the most important decisions I've made in a long time. Yeah. So I hope you'll do more than that, but that's what I would invite you guys to at least start with. Start with something today. Take an action today based on what you've learned or what's inspired you on this.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's a really great tip. And I think so many people, like you mentioned, just have a lot of extra just crap laying around that they don't use. It's collecting dust. It's, you know, taking up space. It's taking up energy, you know, depending on what it is. And yes. freeing that up is liberating. There's really something to that concept of like minimalism, having the least amount possible to actually be effective and just free yourself up to do other things. I think that's really cool. And man, I wish we could dive into to all of these. They are all really fascinating, but we are kind of running up on time here. The more I listen to it, though, the more I can't wait to check out the book and actually dive through it myself. Derek, I appreciate you coming on, brother. It's been a fantastic interview. Is there a last send-off, sort of overall parting message you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, and then also a place that you'd like to send our listeners to check out the book?
Absolutely. And I will say one thing about the Elite Man. There is an Elite Man in you guys, and I know you know this. It's what you teach them. There is a man 2.0 that's emerging on the planet right now, which is a man that is so amazing. It's a warrior. It's with a heart of gold and a soul of steel and a sword of truth that is emerging for all men that the women are crying out for, or just the feminine is crying out for that masculine to show up. And so I really hope you guys will embrace that. And also that when you understand these principles that we're talking about, understand that this is really true. There's a power in you guys. There's a power in you guys. Like Rumi said, if you could see who you really are, you would worship yourself, not from an ego place, but from a place of awe of just how powerful you are. And if you take nothing else away from that, know that no matter what problems you're facing, the power and the potential within you is always way bigger. And I hope you'll embrace that and at the very least say, if this is true, how will I show up today and practice that today?
Love it. Derek, what's the link again to check out the book?
Yeah, it's theabundanceprojectbook.com. Go get it there. Get over $1,200 in coaching and support. You can also just go to Derek Rydell, DerekRydall.com for more resources. Also the podcast, The Abundance Project. And yeah, I look forward to connecting with you guys and really, truly supporting you and having the most abundant year of your life.
Cool. Derek, thanks again, man, for coming on. Really do appreciate it. I know our guys are going to love this episode. So take care and I'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, buddy. Take care, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.